If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Hennepin Healthcare, a network of neighborhood clinics, specialty centers, hospital, and Minnesota's Level 1 Adult and Pediatric Promise Center presents
Healthy Matters.
As always, consult your personal physician if you have health concerns. Here's Denny Long with Hennepin Healthcare internal medicine physician, Dr. David Hilden.
That's good morning. New time for Healthy Matters beginning in the 7 o'clock hour. Thanks for joining us, and you're always welcome to call in your questions and or text. Same number applies, 651-989-9226. Good morning to you, Dr. Hilden.
Good morning, Denny. How are you?
I'm quite well. You're not running in the marathon.
I'm not. I've got a mixed feelings about it because, you know, we're in downtown Minneapolis, and I've run it, I don't know, five or six times. And I just love running it, but there's something awfully nice about driving down here, parking my car, and not realize I'm going to spend the next 4 hours in agony.
Yeah. I'm glad you finally come to your senses.
Not only that, I'm not feeling so well, so I have a scratchy throat a little bit. But good luck to all the marathoners. And you don't need luck because you got this. You know, you probably don't have to say good luck. You've been training for 4, 5, 6 months.
Now, is this supposed to be a windy morning? Does that affect the runners a lot?
It really does, but not if it's coming out of the west, because then it just blows you to St. Paul.
Tailwind. Okay.
We're hoping for a tailwind. But the Twin Cities Marathon is an interesting one because it starts out at U.S. Bank Stadium, and it immediately travels to the west, the wrong way, away from St. Paul, towards Fargo. And then it does a big U-turn around the Minneapolis Lakes, and you're running westerly for most of it you're running from the west to the east for most of it. So it all depends on that wind. Is a 30-mile-an-hour wind running into it on a 48-degree kind of wet morning? Sounds like your kind of day, huh?
Not fun. Not fun.
You're going to do great, though, marathoners.
We have a huge topic today.
We do.
And again, I'm welcoming our listeners to join in. Who did you bring with you? Repeat guest.
I did bring a repeat guest. I have Dr. Ann Murray. Dr. Murray is a specialist in geriatric care and particularly in doing research and studying about the health care of older adults. She's an expert on cognitive impairment, otherwise known as dementia. And so we're going to talk about that today. In addition, she has even further expertise in kidney disease, diabetes, and older adults. So we're going to – she was on our show about a year ago. And Dr. Murray, good to have you back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
How are you doing today? It's good to see you in the studio at our new bright and early time.
Right.
You navigate the traffic okay and the marathoners.
Yeah, there are a lot of them.
Yeah, there are a lot of them out there. So tell our listeners, if you could, a little bit about how you got into your field of both research and clinical cares, how you got into working with older adults, and what drew you to the study of dementia.
Sure. So when I was growing up, I had a wonderful grandmother who was really the matriarch of our extended Irish Catholic family, Mary Riley. And she was a good friend in addition to being my grandmother. And I just, through that, really began to appreciate the stories older people had and their wisdom, their appreciation for life, and kind of enjoyed hanging out with older people.
You know, I concur with that. And we have some older adults who listen to our show today, and I've got a chance to meet a great deal of them. And I recently actually had a conversation with a journalist from a magazine that's intended to be read mostly by older adults. And she asked a similar question. What is it about older adults? I said, I just love seniors. I love folks. I found that older adults are both wise, but they're also funny. They have a sense of humor.
They do. They do. And they're so appreciative of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And as a doctor, if I see a 50-year-old or a 60-year-old or, you know, younger people or a 30-year-old, I don't know, there seems to be a little less sense of balance in their life yet. And I meet an 80 or a 90-year-old, and it's not a surprise to a 90-year-old that I'm not going to live forever. But mm-hmm. they, you know, there seems to be like a, I don't know, just a balance or a peaceful perspective on life. And I find myself laughing a lot with older adults.
Oh, that's the best part.
It is the best part of
and
all.
And they teach you so much. Every single patient I see teaches me something new. So I'm so grateful that I still get to see older patients.
Yeah. Somebody, that same journalist asked me, you know, how do you communicate with older adults? And one thing I drives me nuts is when people sort of use a patronizing tone with older adults. I hate that.
Yeah. You do have to learn how to communicate effectively because so many have hearing loss.
Mm-hmm.
So one easy trick is to lower your voice.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting over about an 8-9 day cold here. My voice is a little bit lower right now. So you got to sound like Lauren Bacall or something. I'm trying to think. Yeah. Lauren Bacall had a lower voice, right?
That's right.
I had to think of somebody there. For women, you got to sound like Lauren Bacall, and I'm going to sound like Barry White or something, you know? So because in all seriousness, because the older adults or people with hearing loss of any age have trouble with higher frequencies.
They do.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, that had not occurred to me. That's good. Yeah. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit, or not a little bit, a lot about dementia today.
Yep.
What is it?
So dementia is the loss of memory and other cognitive functions, such as ability to make decisions, loss of orientation, not knowing where you are, or getting lost in a familiar path, either driving or walking, having word-finding difficulties. So it's a combination of thinking problems. Usually it begins with memory problems that are slowly getting worse. Often it's so insidious or so slow to develop that family members don't really notice it until it gets quite a bit worse. But when somebody who hasn't seen that family member for quite a while sees them and remarks, you know, there's been a change, that often triggers the family to say, well, maybe we should bring them in. Maybe we should go see.
Does the person, him or herself, know?
Often not. Often not. And it isn't always easy to know because there is naturally a decreased ability with remembering names with age. So it's not easy to distinguish between what some people call normal aging and dementia. But usually there's some denial till quite far along.
You use the term normal aging and dementia. And I bet you there's a whole bunch of people listening right now who are thinking, yeah, my husband, he can't remember a lot of stuff. And or my wife, she forgets, you know, names and stuff all the time. Is it possible to distinguish the difference between normal aging, where people do forget things,
right,
and dementia, which is a pathological process?
Right. So the best way to really distinguish it is to get some brief cognitive testing. You're not going to be able to tell in general by yourself without talking to a professional. One point that is sometimes helpful is that if the person can't remember then, but then they remember it a few minutes later, that's not dementia. And it's the short-term memory. So what happened yesterday or last night or last week, that's usually affected first. It's not the long-term memory. So people are often fooled because they say, well, I can remember what happened 50 years ago in detail.
So I'm fine.
You're fine, but you're not. It's the short-term memory that goes first. And the long-term memory is actually often preserved to the very late stage of dementia.
Is that because your memories are stored in different places, or is it the process of storing? Now, that's actually quite fascinating, how our memory even gets formed at all.
That is a great question, and I'm not sure why that is. It's another good thing for me to research.
Yeah, exactly. Because somehow we have to have an experience, and it has to somehow get tucked away in our brain somewhere. And why is it that I've seen that myself, both in family members and in patients, that, oh, gosh, yes, I can remember my childhood, or I can remember, 65 years ago, the day I met my wife, but I really don't know what I had for breakfast this morning.
Right. Well, but that's usually temporary.
Yeah.
And it's not constant. It's not persistent.
So you're a researcher into dementia.
Yeah.
Are there risk factors for dementia of people who are more at risk of getting it?
Yeah. So the biggest risk factor that nobody can change is age. And with every 5 years, your risk of dementia increases, starting with about 60. and it's highest after the age of 85. So once you reach the age of 85, there's about a 50% chance that you'll have some form of dementia.
So I guess the solution to that is, Denny, we're not getting older.
I like that.
That's going to be my strategy.
Let me know how that works.
I went out to Star Wars last night at Orchestra Hall, so I'm not getting older. I'm watching movies for 12-year-olds.
All right. I think that's good.
Well, we're talking to Dr. Ann Murray about dementia. We'll welcome your calls and texts as well.
Very good. We'll take this quick break. 48 degrees in the Twin Cities. If you want to call in your question or text in, the number is the same, 651-989-9226. Fair skies right now. West winds at 10, but they're going to be gusting up to 35 miles an hour this morning. And good morning. Welcome back to this portion of Healthy Matters. We're talking about dementia today. And if you want to call in your question or text, I guess I'll say it again, same number, 651-989-9226. Here again is Dr. Hilden.
Thank you, Denny. We're talking to Dr. Ann Murray. She is one of the nation's, I would even go a little further than that. She's involved in international studies about dementia. She works right with me in the Department of Medicine at Hennepin Healthcare, a.k.a. HCMC, in downtown Minneapolis. We're talking about dementia. Dr. Murray, what causes it? Do we know what causes dementia?
We know a lot more now than we did 20 years ago. So we used to think that there were really only two primary causes. One was Alzheimer's disease, and the other was due to small blood vessel disease or multiple strokes. We know now that there are many causes, and that what we call clinically Alzheimer's disease is often due to a combination of changes in the brain, different kinds of changes in the brain. So the plaques and tangles from Alzheimer's disease, small or large strokes, but also some other changes that are caused by Lewy body disease that are a different kind of cell change. And then also some kind of stiffening of the area that the blood flow to the memory center. So there are at least four very common causes, and usually after death at brain autopsy, that's very evident now. So we know that in general, most dementia has at least three causes and probably more like five.
Awesome. So it's very what we often say, it's multifactorial. There's a lot of different things going on.
It is. But in terms of risk factors that we can do something about, the only thing that we can, what we call modify, change, that's in our control that appears to have an effect is exercise. And that's exercise.
Denny, we can't get out of it.
No.
I think we're going to have to start like exercising again.
Like every day.
Ann's telling us to exercise. So that it could be protective against cognitive decline?
Yes. There are also trials going on right now in patients with mild cognitive impairment, which is the early form of dementia, and with dementia, exercise trials to see if exercise, either by itself or in combination with other things, might be able to decrease the progression of the dementia.
And you're not saying people have to go run marathons, but you're saying incorporate some exercise into your life?
Right. So the standard recommendation is actually pretty much the same as to prevent heart disease, and that is about 30 minutes a day of not rigorous exercise so that you're sweating necessarily, but that you get your heart rate up and you feel like you've had a workout afterwards.
We say that in running and stuff, you got to get the blood flow to the tissues, your muscles, and it must be the same thing.
You have to get the blood flow to your brain. That's the bottom line.
That's what it sounds like you're doing, and that's what exercise probably does. That makes total sense. Do we have time to go to the phones?
Yes, we do. Let's talk to Diane in Rosemont. Diane, what is your question? Good morning.
Good morning. My paternal grandmother passed away with dementia. And her son, my father, just passed away with frontal lobe dementia. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on the hereditary aspect of dementia.
Thank you, Diane, for your call. Ann?
Sorry, I didn't hear how old you said your granddaughter?
Grandfather.
Oh, grandfather. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. How old was your grandfather?
Oh, I think she must be listening on the radio. She left us.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. So in general, yes, there is a hereditary component to most dementias. For Alzheimer's disease, there's a late a late type of Alzheimer's disease and an early type. The early type that occurs before the age of about 60 is usually strongly hereditary. So if one parent has it, the son or daughter has about a 50% chance of getting it.
So that's if the parent had it at an earlier age.
Right. For older age, there is still a hereditary component. So there's what's called an E4 genotype that increases the risk. And if you have one of those, so if you get one from one parent and the other one is normal, your risk is increased about three times. If you have two of those genes, it's increased more about eight times.
So you talked about age at onset as being kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
And now we know that there are some genes that, but people aren't getting routinely tested for those genes,
no,
right?
No, and it doesn't really make sense because those genes aren't what we call penetrant for the older kind of Alzheimer's disease. So if you, even if you have the gene, you may never get it. And in fact, you're less likely to get it than not.
Mm-hmm.
But more patients are starting to go to their doctors and ask for the testing, but we discourage it because even if you have the gene, you may not get it. And then you're maybe making plans when you don't need to.
When you don't even need to.
Yeah.
Know, that might be, it might be at the forefront of research of what we're doing, but maybe if you're not going to, you're going to be planning to get dementia and you maybe aren't even going to, and it's going to affect your whole life.
Right.
I wouldn't get that yet.
Right.
I certainly wouldn't
right.
do that yet.
Right.
Diane, thank you for your call. Do we have time for another call before the break, or should we?
I tell you, let's do that. Let's take Sherry and Champlin's question, and then we'll take a quick break. Go ahead, Sherry. Thank you for calling, Sherry. What's your question?
Oh, hey, Ann, thank you. Thank you so much for this. My husband's had dementia for 2.5 years, and my question is, I've heard that, a lot of sugar in your diet has a lot to do with this Alzheimer's. And then one other quick question, too. I've also read that people that are kind of negative all the time and just kind of their attitude plays a big part in this disease. Is that any one of those questions? Can you answer?
Yeah, good questions. So the high sugar content in your diet by itself has thus far not been called a risk factor, but diabetes is a risk factor. So it doubles the risk. It increases your risk by twice if you have diabetes of having some type of dementia.
So we're going to come back. I have a lot more to talk about on that one. And Sherry, we're going to finish your question
yep.
after the break. We're going to
sure.
take a bottom of the hour break here, but we're going to still talk more about mood and attitude
yep.
and sugar and diabetes after the break. Sherry, thank you for your call, but stay tuned.
Here's our phone number once again and the text number, same number, 651-989-9226 for your calls or your text messages. We'll take this break, be right back with more Healthy Matters here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Hi, good morning. Welcome back to Healthy Matters. We're talking about dementia and welcoming your phone calls and text messages. Lots more to talk about, Dr. Hilden.
Indeed, Denny, indeed. Before I get into dementia, I do want to just a little public service announcement. It is time to get your flu shots if you haven't yet. I just read an article in one of the an article from, I don't know where I read it. Australia had a bad year. And that matters to us because when Australia has a bad year, we're more likely to have a bad flu year. It doesn't mean we have to. It's not perfect. But 2 years ago, Australia had a dreadful year of the flu and it kind of heads our way. And we had a dreadful year for the flu in 2017, 2018, where nearly 80,000 people died of the flu. And that followed a bad year in Australia. Well, Australia is just completing a really rough flu year. So it is time to get your flu shots right now. Go today. There, that's my public service announcement. We're talking about dementia with Dr. Ann Murray, who is a researcher and a clinician for older adults and a specialist in dementia. and also in diabetes and kidney disease. Before the break, Sherry had called in and asked two questions, one about sugar in your diet and the other about your mood and your negative attitude. Before we move on to the latter, I want to talk a little bit more about diabetes. What is the connection between diabetes and dementia? And is there anything that people with diabetes should know to try to prevent dementia? Or what could you say about that?
Right. Is this on?
Indeed, it's on.
Okay, sorry.
You are on. You and a couple of your radio listeners are on.
Okay, so diabetes causes small blood vessel changes throughout the body, including the brain. And it especially can cause, there's an increased risk of strokes, and especially small strokes. It also is associated with inflammation, which is bad for all parts of the body, but especially in the brain. So there was a large study called ACCORD, A-C-C-O-R-D, to see if aggressive treatment of blood sugar, blood pressure, and cholesterol might be able to decrease the risk of cognitive decline and dementia. And it did not show that. But the problem was that the population was a little bit too young. The mean age was about 55, and we really needed to be looking at people of 65 or older. So we don't have a final answer. However, maintaining blood sugar and blood pressure, especially together, do appear to decrease the risk of cognitive decline.
Thank you. What about the second half of Sherry's question, where she was talking about people who kind of have a negative attitude? Is there anything about that you could say about that in dementia?
Yes. So there have been several studies, one out of Rush Institute in Chicago, Rush Institute on Aging, using the religious order study of nuns and priests, that has shown that optimism is definitely protective against cognitive decline and dementia. And there have been a couple other studies since then in other populations. So yes, if you're an optimist, you're in better shape.
That's one more reason to have a good outlook. I love that. I didn't know that to be the case.
Yep.
We have a ton of text messages. Do you mind if I take a few of these?
Sure.
All right. I'll try to find some here. What about, we were talking about diabetes. Somebody just has a two-word text that says metformin use?
Yeah.
What about metformin for listeners is a first-line treatment for diabetes?
So there is an ongoing metformin trial run by the National Institute of Health and a combination of other institutions looking at the benefit and risks of metformin to prevent not only dementia but other aging outcomes. So we don't have an answer on that. It does seem to have positive effects in terms of decreasing the risk of inflammation as well as the first-line agent for diabetes.
All right. Here's a question that's fascinating. It has to do with technology and all the information that we are inundated with, and I'll read it to you. It says, I am an 83-year-old senior. I feel that I am a visual learner rather than oral, therefore have never been good at names. But I read once that we are so inundated in today's world with continuous information and our brains have not been trained to retain it. Is that true?
So that person does not have dementia.
Yeah. Whoever you send, we don't know who sends in most of the text messages. Whoever you are, you nailed it.
That is a great question. There definitely are people that have better visual than oral memories. I'm one of them. So I know exactly what you're talking about. It doesn't increase your risk of dementia per se. And nobody actually knows. There haven't been studies to prove the theory that we're inundated too much to retain what used to be an easy level of information. But it's a great question, and it should be done.
I was just having a conversation last week, and by the way, I wanted to thank my colleague Brian Nelson for covering for me last week. I was in Tucson, Arizona, meeting with about 100 of my colleagues in internal medicine at a meeting. And one of them, we were talking about data and information and we get. And bear with me here, but if you think back to grade school and your teacher had to do a mimeograph of something, and that was hard to do, so you couldn't the information you got was pretty rich because there wasn't so much of it. Mm. So you got that mimeographed handout in school.
You must be really old.
Don't you? I had mimeographed. I had that stuff at Kenny School in South Minneapolis. Or people had to handwrite a letter so that it was packed with information. But then we got, you know, copy machines, and then we got the internet, and now you get inundated with information, 95% of which is garbage. And so it's so there's way more of the information that we have now, and only so much of it's garbage.
Well, and how much of our perceived increased memory difficulties are due to distraction because of that constant stimulation?
It is constant stimulation, and multitasking. People have found that you're not as good at what you do when you're doing six things at once, regardless of how good you think you are.
So one of the questions that we brought up before that we haven't addressed is, what's the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's disease?
You know what? There's a text message that says exactly that
sentence. Yeah. So dementia is the big umbrella term, the overall term to describe loss of thinking abilities. And Alzheimer's disease, excuse me, is the most common cause. And then there's vascular or mixed Alzheimer's and blood vessel problems, Lewy body disease, frontal temporal dementia. So those are all different types of dementia.
Here's one that I'm smiling because I know about this one. It's about you, Dr. Murray. First of all, somebody likes hearing you on the radio. It says you have a great radio voice. Oh. To that, I would agree. This is from a listener. But the question says this: you may be familiar with, I have been a part of the ASPRE study, which is continuing. I am so grateful for the study because the cognitive part is so important, and that's from Mary. So for listeners, Dr. Murray is not only familiar with the ASPRE study, she's in charge of it. And this is a study of some, it's big. I'm going to let you tell us about the ASPRE study, if you would, Dr. Murray.
Right.
And Mary's comment is a good one about the cognitive part.
It's a great one. And thank you, Mary, so much for being a participant. We are so appreciative. And I'm glad that you enjoy the cognitive testing. We've had several patients tell us here where we have a couple of sites in Minnesota that they really appreciate that part of the study. So ASPRE is a study to see whether low-dose aspirin in people 70 and older who were healthy, so had no history of dementia or a stroke or a heart attack, if it might decrease their risk of dementia, disability, or death.
You mean taking the aspirin might prevent?
Right. If taking it daily versus a sugar pill might decrease the risk. And they did that, 19,000 people in Australia and the U.S., did that for almost 5 years, and the study was ended about 2 years ago, and we published our results just over a year ago in the New England Journal of Medicine in three different papers, all showing that low-dose aspirin, so that's, 100 milligrams.
That's like, in this country, that's a baby aspirin.
That's a baby aspirin. It's actually the international standard for a baby aspirin. It's 100 milligrams, did not prevent dementia, disability, or death, and in fact, the risk of bleeding was far outweighed any potential benefit. It also did not decrease the risk of heart disease. So because of that, we were a large part in creating new guidelines for doctors prescribing aspirin so that people who are healthy and 70 and older should not be taking aspirin for what we call primary prevention, that is to prevent those things. Only if they've had a heart attack or stroke or their doctor says or atrial fibrillation, then you should continue it, but not if you haven't had those things.
That was a groundbreaking study.
It was.
It was a little bit of your life, right?
It was 10 years of my life. I was very fortunate to be a part of it. We were the U.S. coordinating center, so the center to run the study for the U.S., together with Melbourne, University of Monash in Melbourne, Australia. And so we just had a tremendous team of colleagues in Australia, and it's been a great experience.
I have put, for listeners who might not be aware of it, there I have two or three posts about the use of aspirin, including one of the posts is with Dr. Murray from last year about the ASPRE study. That's at myhealthymatters.org, all one word, myhealthymatters.org. And just search for aspirin if you go to that site. And there's a lot about whether or not you ought to be taking an aspirin. It's a little different than what we used to think.
I know we have to take a break here. I wanted to ask you about that Soothe Your Souls event. Oh, yeah, How did that go?
Yeah, we had one of our community health series at our hyperbaric chamber. We called it the Soothe Your Souls because it was about your feet. And it was at our hyperbaric chamber. I wanted to thank everybody who came out to that. It was a great event. Particularly, there's a couple of listeners, Ava and Rudy. Thank you for being there. And thank you for listening to the show.
Very good. All right, we'll take this quick break. Again, we'll invite our listeners to join in on the conversation. Talking dementia this morning, 651-989-9226. That number will get you on the phone line and the text line as well. In the Twin Cities, fair skies, our temperature reading 48 degrees. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Healthy Matters. We're talking about dementia this morning. 651-989-9226. That number will get you on the telephone line and the text line as well. Speaking of the phones, let's go to Ken. Ken is calling from Blaine. Go ahead, Ken, with your question, please.
Good morning. I had a minor stroke this summer. I was in the hospital for a couple days, and they at that time did MRI and diagnosed cerebral amyloid angiopathy, and then as a result, I went through a series of tests at Mayo Clinic, and they did MRI and contrast MRIs. They did EEGs and some other tests to evaluate my heart and see if there was a blood clotting situation, but which there wasn't. And they did determine that I did have amyloid in the brain, but I did not have inflammation. And I guess I'm wondering how all this, my EEG was normal, how all of this contributes to the subject that you're talking about today.
Great questions, Ken.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you're very well-versed compared to everybody else listening, and that's it's a kind of a complex topic, cerebral angiopathy. So what that means is that there's amyloid basically coating the blood vessels that increase your risk of bleeding in the brain. By itself, I don't know that there's been an absolute – there's a study that shows absolutely how much your risk of dementia is increased, but it's your risk of bleeding and stroke that's increased. However, stroke doubles the risk of subsequent dementia.
Any kind of strokes?
Any kind of stroke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So amyloid is a little protein.
It floats
around in your bloodstream.
Right. It's in everybody's bloodstream, but when it's overproduced, it creates plaques in the brain, and we think it actually isn't the cause of dementia, but actually the end product of the process that produces it. So it's more like a scar in the brain.
So most people, you wouldn't know you have cerebral amyloid angiopathy, would you?
No. No.
I do get questions on this show, I'm going to say relatively frequently, you know, a few a year,
yep,
about that very condition. And I remember I got one just a few months ago, and I had to say, I don't know. I don't know why you have that. And I don't know exactly what the connection is, but there is an association.
There appears to be a hereditary component, but,
right,
but it's hard to say because so few people have it and come in to get diagnosed.
Yeah, you don't know you have it. You don't, yeah, get diagnosed.
Not unless you've had a stroke.
Yeah, thank you, Ken, for your call.
That's a great question.
All right, let's go back to the phones. I think Robert is calling from Hackensack with a question. Robert, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning.
How can we help you?
I was wondering what the doctor's view is on Privigen. It's a highly touted product for,
yeah,
brain health.
Yep.
And would that help prevent dementia?
So Privigen has an interesting story in that it has not been FDA approved here as a prescription in the U.S., but it is, for example, in Australia and I believe some parts of Europe. In the trials done here, it did not decrease the risk of further decline or further memory loss in people with mild cognitive impairment or dementia, but it may be – there's a suggestion that it may be helpful in people that haven't been diagnosed yet with mild cognitive impairment or dementia. So
it's not cheap, is it?
It is not cheap. I'm not sure now exactly how much it costs, but it's not cheap. So I don't think anybody's going to tell you absolutely take it or absolutely don't take it. I think the answer is still not clear.
The jury's out on that
one. The jury is out on that one.
It has so many things. You know, people ask that. The Prevagen question might be one of the most common things I get on the show as well. And I usually use an answer sometime like something like what you said, is that we do not have evidence really one way or the other on what it does. At least we don't have strong evidence yet.
Well, at least the U.S. doesn't believe there's evidence. Okay. Other countries do.
Yeah, oh, that's so that is a new wrinkle to it. Yes. I like that. Yeah. Other countries do think there might be some benefit to it. So right. it's something to consider if you want to spend your money on it and it's something that's important to you.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the text lines because there's a lot of them. Here's one. Are migraines an indication for getting dementia? Or I guess what they're saying is there a connection?
I don't believe there's any evidence for that.
Here's one that says it's not for you, really, but it's a great idea. How about a show on healthy aging? Yes, we're going to do that. That's a great idea.
That would be fun.
Yeah, that'll be a great show.
Really fun. So the other thing that I wanted to point out is in addition to exercise, there is evidence now that healthy eating also decreases the risk of cognitive decline. So there are trials going on right now where they combine healthy eating with exercise, and one of them is in this country, and then using your brain more, so cognitive activity.
Somebody is asking that question on the text line about what else other than exercise, and he or she is recommending a book. He says, just finished reading a book by David Sinclair called Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have to. What other things besides exercise help prevent dementia? So you said – so if you missed it, listeners, if you're just tuning in, you said earlier, and maybe you could say it again, exercise has been shown.
Right. So regular exercise at least 5 days a week, about 30 minutes a day. Get your heart rate up. Resistance exercise, so like doing weights, is also helpful. But for sure, the, quote, aerobic, you know, walking, running, biking. And then eating a healthy diet, such as a Mediterranean diet. So low.
I'm just going to move to Nice, France.
Yeah, right. So low in red meat.
Much easier that way.
High in fish, nuts, olive oil, but mostly eat plants. And it is really true. Eat plants.
We should probably say that more often on the show. The more plant-based diet you can eat is probably good for you and the planet.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Brad is calling, I believe, from Rosemont. Brad, are you with us?
Yes.
What can we do for you?
You know, my question is alcoholism or drug addiction?
Yeah.
You know, in the past or, you know, that runs in the family, has that have anything to do with getting dementia? Or?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
So there is actually a specific cause or a specific type of dementia due to severe alcoholism called Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, which causes a dementia that but also has other nerve problems like problems with your eye movements and balance. But if it isn't severe alcoholism, it can still increase the risk of dementia. Alcohol is toxic to the brain. That's the bottom line.
It's interesting that alcohol is toxic to your entire body.
Yes,
and
it is.
This is a little bit news to me here that I'm learning from you right now. You know, we all know it's toxic to it's toxic to the heart. It's especially toxic to the liver, but the brain as well.
Right. And, you know, not enough studies have been done to look at that. And the National Institute of Aging right now is soliciting requests for funding to fund studies of dementia in alcoholics.
We're going to run out of time, but quickly on this one, a text message. What is the difference between Parkinson's-related dementia compared to others?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's often also called Lewy body dementia associated with Parkinson's disease. And the primary differences are that there are often hallucinations, so people see things that aren't really there.
Parkinson's?
In Parkinson's dementia, right, and also that if their cognitive function level, so their kind of attention level, may fluctuate even through the course of the day, and then they have the Parkinsonian symptoms, you know, the stiffness, the slow walking, the tremor.
We have been talking with Dr. Anne Murray about dementia. I'm sorry if we didn't get to your text message, but we're going to run out of time. She is a researcher and a geriatrician who specializes in dementia and diabetes and kidney disease. But thank you for being a repeat guest on the show.
Oh, it's been so fun.
It's been great to have you. I like the texter's idea. We're going to do a show about healthy aging. I'm going to put it on the docket. That would be a great show. So thank you for that. Just a reminder, myhealthymatters.org is the blog site. I encourage you to go there. Just type the word aspirin in the search box, and you can find more about Dr. Murray and about whether or not you ought to be taking an aspirin. There's relatively new guidelines on that. So that's myhealthymatters.org. A brief, again, thank you to my colleague from the Hennepin Golden Valley Clinic, Dr. Brian Nelson, who covered for me last week in my absence. He's a brilliant doctor and a great guy. And if you need to see him, I encourage you to, if you live in the western part of the metro, it's at the Golden Valley Clinic on Highway 100 in Duluth Street. It's a great clinic.
There are a lot of great clinics around. How about the new Brooklyn Park?
Indeed, the Brooklyn Park Clinic is amazing. It's on Zane up there in Brooklyn Park. I was there a couple weeks ago. If you live in the north or the northwest part of the metro and you need a doctor or a pediatrician, an adult doctor, acupuncture, massage therapy, they have an amazing physical therapy gym, the Brooklyn Park Clinic. The number for all of our clinics is 612-873-6963. 612-873-MY-MD.
Next week we're going to be doing?
We're going to do an open line show.
You'll be driving the show next week. So your questions by phone and text and an open line show. We'll see you next week for more Healthy Matters.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.